I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. A marvelous book is out now, 111 West Coast Literary Portraits. It's a handsome coffee table book from Mother Tongue Publishing featuring portraits taken by Barry Peterson and Blaise Enright. They have taken these photographs of British Columbia's authors that were featured in various exhibits and events. These writers are legendary or well-known, like the cover with Alice Munro, or emerging or mid-career writers who have lived in B.C. Each portrait is accompanied by text written by the author. I'll ask Barry Peterson, who joins me now, about how these portraits came about, how the accompanying text was selected, and the process by which Mr. Peterson and Ms. Enright worked to get these photos together. There's an introduction by Alan Twigg, and a number of events surrounding the book. Visit mothertonguepublishing.com for more information on the book. Barry Peterson was born and raised near Chicago and came to Canada in the 1960s. He's a freelance photographer and lives in Comox, British Columbia. His own website is at barrypetersonphotography.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Barry Peterson. Mr. Peterson, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for inviting us.
You're very welcome. So when did this idea of putting this book together come to you?
We first started thinking about it when we moved to B.C. in the mid-1990s. And when we came, we had previously met during a portrait photography course at Ontario College of Art. We actually thought when we did move to B.C. that we wanted to try and pursue that, to try and work together on a project to start. And so one of the things we did was just to actually experiment with it, to try and see what was different about B.C. than other places. And the information we had and what we thought in observing was that people seemed to read more here and that the writers here were very, very, very esteemed and held in high regard. So we just went further doing research, start to look at what kind of photographs have been taken of people before, and we elected to, instead of doing photographs of people with kind of backgrounds like typical kind of photo shots or book covers.
Yeah.
That we wanted to actually go to their homes to photograph them, which we found had not been done before. And the more we started doing it, we actually just started it just kind of one at a time, and each time that we photographed somebody, we usually got three or four more referrals. So we never had a problem actually getting referrals, but it was more of how can we actually process this? How can we better organize it? So we wound up running into a couple of different people: Alan Twigg from BC Book World,
mm-hmm.
Mona Furtig from Mother Tongue, who sort of helped us try and look at the whole field of BC writers, because if you stop and look at it, there are so many writers here that Alan Twigg thinks there's probably at least 10,000 writers.
Yeah.
So to try and document all that is impossible.
So what would the sessions be like? I mean, you just said that you'd go to their homes to photograph them.
Right.
Prior to getting to their house, say, did you have an idea of what you wanted the author in particular to do?
What we would do is that after, like, we would speak to them on the phone, explain what we're doing, and tell them that we wanted to photograph them in and around their home, or another place that they felt very comfortable at. So sometimes we didn't necessarily photograph them in the home, but somewhere else. And we would kind of maybe exchange some ideas. And usually what happened by the time we actually got there to photograph them, they had more ideas. Maybe we had an idea. Then we tried to share those ideas. And what I always tried to do was to pick maybe two or three different locations. Try a roll of film here, try a roll of film here. And then when we were done, I did them on film. I developed film myself, send them contacts so that they could see what the photos look like. and then we'd speak on the phone, and then we'd make a selection based on that.
Yeah. Now, so you'd spend how long with an author, say?
Sometimes it could be 15 minutes, 20 minutes. Other times, 2 hours.
Yeah. Now, there's a shot of an author, R.W. Gray. Now, he's in water.
Yes.
Were you in water as well?
Yes. It was a scary kind of experience, actually. We had talked about it, and he liked Magritte, the kind of paintings they did, and mm-hmm. and using the umbrellas and things like that. So we decided we were going to go to English Bay. Didn't really think about what the reaction was going to be, and we went there on a Sunday afternoon, and very warm, and I had no idea how many people were at English Bay on a Sunday afternoon. And we got down there, we had the sort of props, and we started to go out in the water, and all of a sudden everybody started yelling and screaming, and I thought it was just kind of a juggler nearby or something, but they were thinking that we were sort of a performance arts group. And they started running towards the water, and I got a bit scared. We were out quite a ways, because I had a lot of money and equipment and plus the electronic gear. And what was unbelievable is all of a sudden this giant of a man got behind us, and he turned out to be a lifeguard. And he kind of saved us, and I never got a chance to thank the guy, but he really saved us.
Yeah. So the goal when you started was to look at these authors.
Yes.
From this particular place.
Yes.
Did you foresee that you'd be doing some sort of service? I mean, that's what people are saying about these photographs that you've all taken.
Well, I think it's wound up being that. I don't think we ever envisioned anything going past 10.
Really?
And that's, we were just going to look at it like, you know, let's do 6 or 7, 8, 9, 10, and then see where we are, and then, you know, maybe we can continue doing it. But, no, I didn't think that we were going to go any further than that.
Yeah. And so you obviously have more than 111, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So why 111? And how do you pick the people that you've that are in this book?
Well, people sort of helped us pick them. 111 just happened to, I don't know why, you know, yeah. it wasn't planned at 111, but we could still be photographing, I guess, but we did pick some kind of arbitrary group. Initially, it was just, you know. It was 70, and then it was 100, and then it just wound up 111.
Yeah. So do you still take authors' photos?
I've been so busy with this in the last 2 years, I haven't. Actually, the last year and a half, that I haven't really had much time. But I think once the number of events that we're doing sort of settles down, that I might do some again.
Yeah. I don't know anything about photography or film. I mean, I've had photographers on this program before, so I'm fascinated in the whole process. So you shot only in black and white, is that correct?
Only in black and white.
Yeah. And on film.
Yes.
So why black and white?
I think that's more of a personal choice. I know that black and white prints are more archival than color prints. When I started, I didn't know as much about digital. It would have been a huge expense for me to change to digital. I spent a number of years as a commercial photographer in Toronto, and every day I had to do color shots, and I got so sick of doing the color shots, I always kind of yearned just to be able to do black and white shots. So the minute I left that commercial end, I haven't done color since.
Yeah, and what I found fascinating in reading about this book and about you is that film, it's using film and processing that as you do, it's a lot better because it gets right into the fibers, I guess, of the paper, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's layers of emotion with the black and white paper. I don't know if it's just me or some other people I know, but if they look at digital prints, they really don't see any depth to the photograph, mainly because the inks go right into the photograph. Whereas the old traditional black and white prints that I use, they're into different layers. So you actually get an illusion of some depth.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know, as I said, I don't know anything about photography, but it just, the images seem clearer, they seem like you're there, it's almost high def, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. The other things that interested me, you use a Hasselblad camera, is that correct?
That's correct.
And these Carl Zeiss lenses, is that right? Is that how you pronounce it? Now, these are the best, I guess, in photography,
well,
right?
Well, I consider them the best. I've used them since the 70s. I mean, I have a bit of a bias, too. I'm Swedish. Hasselblad is the only Swedish camera ever made.
Yeah.
And for many years, it was considered the best commercial camera available. It's now made in Japan. It's much different. It's digital, etc. But, I mean, the years that I've used it, I mean, I have lenses that go back to the 70s that are probably as good, if not better, than anything that's available now.
Yeah. And I guess this equipment is worth a lot?
It's, since digital has come, because of the number of people that have left traditional photography for digital, the price has probably gone in half.
Really?
Yeah.
So do you find that you can still get, I don't know, like equipment for it, like if something's busted or?
I'm really lucky because I know the one of the Hasselblad repairmen in Vancouver, and he's retired now, but he still does work for me. If I need anything, if the parts are no longer made, he'll make a parts. I mean, he's a European craftsman, and I always tell him that he can never die because my cameras will die with it.
Yeah. Did you have anyone that was difficult, say, to photograph? I mean, you must have more than 111 stories for the photographs that are taken.
Yeah, we have a lot of stories.
Yeah.
You know, in the end, I don't think anybody was difficult. Sometimes people were difficult until they actually saw the photographs we had previously done, and then they were great. I mean, they were so pleased to look at that, and I think they were so pleased to think that, you know, that I'd be able to, do a similar or even better job. And they would always show me shots that they had done before, and I was pleased that we were able to do better work.
Was there anyone that you hadn't shot that you would have liked to?
Oh, probably many. Part of the problem of having 10,000 writers available is that, like many people have said to me and to other people, that, you know, like, why didn't you photograph such and such, or why isn't this person? And, you know, I don't have really an answer to that, and it's, we simply didn't have time. We tried to make the best choices we could, and I can't continue to do this forever.
Yeah. How did you choose the text that accompanies the photograph?
That was usually done the writer themselves.
I see.
The only parameters we had is that they had to supply us with text only on one page because it was going to be printed on the opposite page. There's actually two parts that go with this. Originally, there was a photo exhibition that's called Lit Happens. And so all the pieces are framed the same way as they are in the book. And that's, so the writer is on the left-hand side, and the text is on the right.
And so at these exhibits where these photos have been shown, they must have gotten a lot of attention.
There's been a lot of attention. Yeah. In fact, it's currently up in Burnaby at the McGill Library, and that'll be up until December. And I'm in Salt Spring now, and it's being shown for a week here at the Manon Hall. So we have 34 here, and I think we have 40 at McGill.
Yeah, and so do people come up to you, say, at these exhibits, and do they tell you things about what they see?
It's what I find incredible about the exhibition is that the time people spend in the gallery.
Yeah.
I mean, they spend at least a half hour, sometimes up to an hour, and they read every passage, and sometimes they go back and read another passage, and they write down names of the writers, presumably to go off and find out more about them or to find books. So I think it's been a win-win situation.
Well, why Alice Munro on the cover? I mean, it's a great choice, and it's a great photograph, and I'm just wondering why, out of the 111, you all chose her.
Well, it didn't start out to be that. What happened is that I was... Alice is not photographed very much. She's fairly reclusive. And I was asked if I wanted to photograph her at the Lifetime Achievement Awards in 2005.
Uh-huh.
And so I was able to set up there. It's the only one, really, that I used a background at because I had to do that. And Alice happened to be there. I got 10 minutes with her and did a bunch of photos, and I didn't think we'd ever be able to use that really for anything. And I happened to run into her in Comox, where I'm from, and she was very pleased with the photograph and said she'd be, you know, very very honored for it to appear on the cover. So that's how that came about.
Yeah. Now, you have a number of authors have chosen to pose with their dogs.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
I think one person, I mean, dogs are a little easier. I used to do some pet photography sometime. They're hard things to control. Dogs are easier. Cats are almost impossible. And one person, Gopun Sang, his cat actually came up. I mean, we tried a number of times to get him to come up on the bed, but he wouldn't do it. In the minute you didn't want him on the bed, that's when he came up on the bed. So we took his shot.
This is a good time for BC and for BC writers, isn't it?
I think it is. And I mean, so many people have told me that this is really a great book. It's a great celebration of our writers. And we've thought that since we started, you know, like, I mean, it's hard to believe it's 15 years ago. But, yeah, I think it's a great celebration.
And I understand that you're on Salt Spring this morning.
Correct.
You're at the Mother Tongue office, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. It was it great working with them? I mean, they're a great house, aren't they?
Oh, geez, they're fabulous. I mean, I've been dealing with Mona since I took her photograph in 1999. And you know, we kept running into each other all the time. And she's such a great person to work with. I couldn't imagine doing this book with anybody else other than Mona.
Yeah, I mean, the book looks good, too, doesn't it?
It's fabulous.
Yeah. Well, so I guess I asked you this earlier. I mean, you will continue photographing BC authors, right?
Yes, I think I have to take a bit of a hiatus. I've had some requests from some authors, and I've had to put it off for a while. But I'll probably do, I'll do some, but probably not as many as I have.
And have any of these authors of the 111 that are in this book, have they used these photographs for themselves, say, on their books?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've really, you know, said, you know, use it as much as you want. The only thing I've asked is for them just to give me credits, and I've never asked for any money for these.
Yeah. And so, Blaze, you guys stopped working together a few years ago, is that right?
Yeah, 2003. We're married at the time, and we separated and divorced, and she lives in Nelson now, and I live in Comox.
Yeah, and the book and how it turned out, I mean, is she happy with it?
I haven't spoken to her directly, but Mona has, and she was apparently just ecstatic with it.
Yeah. This is such a great book. Congratulations on it, and thank you for the service that you've done with your work and with this book.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate being on today.
You're very welcome. The website's for more, BarryPetersonPhotography.com, and then, of course, MotherTonguePublishing.com, which publishes this book. It's called 111 West Coast Literary Portraits, photographs by Barry Peterson and Blaze Enright, and then text from these 111 authors. Barry Peterson on the line from Salt Spring Island this morning in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.